drinks a cola, rookie streakers, number geekers, bunch of podcast wisdom seekers, Ben and Tendy, Ben Revere, Garrett Richards risks the beer. I check my league 10 times a day. What else do I have to say? Okay, welcome to part two of our starting pitcher preview. Adam Azer, Heath Cummings, Scott White, and Chris Towers. You can follow us on Twitter at CBS Scott White, at Heath Cummings Senior, Heath Cummings SR, at C Towers CBS, and I am at Adam Azer, AIZER. Hope you enjoyed part one. You know, it's funny, we did a draft yesterday, guys, that after we did our podcast, we did a draft, and we all pretty much stuck to our pitching strategy and pitching philosophy, with me and Scott prioritizing it a little bit more, Heath in the middle, and then Chris, you know, waiting and waiting and waiting. So I want to make a point here, because I was kind of thinking about this as I was looking at the way the draft unfolded. It was a 12-team roto draft. I feel like starting pitcher and outfield have a lot of similarities in the way I'm going about them. There's a lot of really good pitchers you can take late, same way with outfield, and you don't want to fill up too early with your starting pitchers. But also, you know, it's a little top-heavy at the same time. Do you think there are similarities between the two positions, starting pitcher and outfield?
Well, when you break it down that way, that's kind of how I see it, too. I think I think with pitcher, it's more of a just the way the game is changing, a reflection of the way the game is changing. And outfield is kind of just a random one-year blip. We have a lot of outfield prospects coming up, by the way, so I think that's going to correct itself pretty soon.
I don't agree. I know that's shocking to everyone that I'm going to disagree, but I don't mind filling up outfield early. I filled up outfield in a roto league yesterday with five outfielders pretty early.
How early?
Well, my outfield was Mike Trout, George Springer, Ian Desmond, Jose Bautista, and Dexter Fowler.
Okay.
So probably in the first 12 rounds.
I had four in the first seven, and I don't mind doing that. The difference, I think, is kind of something that Chris touched on yesterday, is I feel pretty confident those outfielders are going to be what I believe they're going to be.
Yeah, I think the big thing is that the later on I get in drafts, the harder it is for me to find guys that I think have real upside as hitters. I never have that problem at starting pitcher.
Okay, well, we're going to go through average draft position, and we're going to find our best values. And we're going to tell you that next week is bold prediction week, so make sure you get your bold predictions in. Email us at fantasybaseball@cbsi.com, fantasybaseball@cbsi, that's the letter i.com, and put bold prediction in the subject line. And I will read one per week, one per show. We'll start each show with our bold prediction of the day. We want to get the listeners more involved. We want to hear from you, so, you know, give us your feedback. I think we should probably run through the news and notes real quick here. There's no update on David Price and his ailing elbow. They said the MRI was inconclusive. We don't know much more than, if anything, than what we knew yesterday. Did David Price get drafted yesterday?
Yes. It was like the seventh round?
Eighth, I think. Eighth. Which was, I mean, we're talking about probably just a window of a few days where we're in this state of uncertainty.
Yeah.
But it was earlier than I was willing to in that state of uncertainty.
Well, okay. You figure, you know, third round is where he usually goes, right?
Third, fourth, yeah.
24 is the amount of round, or 23 is the amount of rounds. So 3 plus 23 is, should have gone like the 13th round. Is the math right on that?
I have no idea.
Yeah,
I didn't follow your math.
I'm saying he's either going to be himself or he's going to be undrafted. And so you just average those two.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I like that. good way to evaluate David Price right now. But hopefully you're not drafting right now. We need a little bit more information. You're looking at Cubs starting pitchers, and this is probably more relevant for points leagues where people are drafting Mike Montgomery to be their RP. Joe Maddon discussed using both Brett Anderson and Mike Montgomery as his number five starting pitcher, so that's weird. Seattle acquired a pitcher, Chase DeJong, from the Dodgers for shortstop Drew Jackson and another pitcher. I think we can leave this alone for now, right?
Yeah.
All right,
another Seattle trade. They're the best.
Yeah, 14 trades since the end of last season, according to the News Tribune. That's crazy. This is big news. It will be eventually. Jung Ho Kang, he got a suspended sentence for DUI. So we don't know what the penalty is going to be. Looks like Jung Ho Kang is going to avoid jail time. But you got to figure MLB could certainly step in here, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, they could. It's an 8-month sentence that's delayed. If he stays out of trouble for 2 years, he doesn't have to serve any jail time. But he's going to be back with the Pirates for spring training. But we don't know, right, if there's going to be any disciplinary action from MLB. So he's still kind of a late round gamble at this point.
All right. Cincinnati could use both Raisel Iglesias and Michael Lorenzen for multi-inning saves. I don't want an expanded answer because we'll do this next week, but true or false, this is the hardest year drafting closers in a long time.
I will say true. I'm a little more willing to spend on it because I don't trust the job security of like half the people in the job.
I feel like we're all spending on closer more than we usually do, I will say.
Heath, you haven't spoken in a while, so I'll throw it to you for this next news item. Albert Pujols could make his spring training debut in the next few days. He's coming off foot surgery, so are you encouraged that he's getting back in the game fairly early?
No. He's going to have to use his bat as a cane just to get into the batter's box. He's like 117 years old.
What should his walk-up music be?
His walk-up music.
Let's think about that.
We will think about that. I did see something else on
Old Man by Neil Young.
I was going to say that.
Fantastic.
Yeah, nice.
There was something else on Jung Ho Gong in one of the stories. There was a link to a tweet from Ji Ho Yu, who is a sports writer in Korea, saying that Gong still has not been approved for a work visa and he's already been turned down once.
No. Okay.
So he can't come back yet. He's trying to get a work visa.
All right, developing story, we'll call it that. Lucas Duda returned for the Mets. So look at, you know, in terms of outfielders, if you want more playing time for Conforto, you probably want less playing time for Lucas Duda. Could move Jay Bruce to first base, but, you know, we'll have to see what happens there. All right, time to look at average draft position. Clayton Kershaw, fifth overall pick. And yeah, we're going to get to, I hope, at least 70 starting pitchers today.
Oof.
It's ambitious. But Clayton Kershaw, fifth overall pick. Too early?
For me.
Oh, yeah.
Especially considering probably. This is generally considered to be Roto ADP, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Without the health issues, I'd be fine with it. Because he's like such a clear standout in ERA and WHIP. But it's just too risky with the back.
Kershaw went 10th overall in our 12-team roto draft yesterday. He went before Bryce Harper. I asked the three of you who you would take, because there are those nine hitters, you know, Trout, Bryant, Altuve, Betts, Goldschmidt, Arenado, Donaldson, Machado, Anthony Rizzo. Those were the first nine picked yesterday in our draft, and then it was Kershaw. I asked you guys yesterday who you would take, Harper or Kershaw. I think one of you, I think Chris said Kershaw, and the other said Harper?
Yeah, I don't think Bryce Harper's any less risky than Clayton Kershaw at that spot.
Okay.
To be clear, Scott White would say that Clayton Kershaw's average draft position is sixth, not fifth.
You know what? I'm going to use my average draft position, my interpretation of ADP. Yes,
because he
has the sixth highest ADP on average, but it is fifth overall.
Because there's three people fourth.
It's 5.3rd.
Yeah.
See, what happens is you can actually average where all the leagues draft a player, and that'll give you a number, or you can take the order where that number ranks among all that players. And I like doing the latter, because otherwise you end up with like 20, 25 players who are going on the 11th round in average.
I'm hashtag Team Scott on this one.
All right.
That's fine. Heath, by the way to represent the Midwest with your Farm Aid shirt today. Very.
Thank you very much.
Casual Friday over there?
What's that?
Casual Friday.
It's Casual Friday, for sure.
Okay, good.
Just representing real America.
It's the most dad he's ever looked. Saying a lot.
All right, Max Scherzer. So basically, bottom line is fifth is a little too high for Kershaw. You can expect him to start going after those nine hitters are off the board. You can expect the Kershaw pick to be made at that point. That's what we recommended, somewhere around the end of round one, beginning of round two. Max Scherzer, 13th overall. Scott, yesterday in the draft, you did take Max Scherzer, but you took him with the 7th pick of round two. So that's what, 19th overall? 13, 14, 15, 16, 17. Yes, I got it right. 19th overall, one pick before Madison Bumgarner. Those were the second and third pitchers off the board. And, that's where you were comfortable taking Max Scherzer.
Comfortable might be a stretch.
Okay.
Well, the best hitter on the board, in my estimation, was Daniel Murphy. And that, like, I couldn't bring myself to take Murphy over Scherzer. You know, if Trey Turner hadn't gone yet, if any of the first-tier first basemen hadn't gone yet, Miggy or Votto or Encarnacion, then I probably would have gone that route instead. I might have passed up Scherzer if not for us podcasting yesterday and you saying that Scherzer was planning to go back to his old fastball grip before the spring training. That alone was enough for me to say, okay, I can do it here.
I was reading up on it as well, and it does sound like he is going to pitch in games with the three-fingered fastball, at least to start. He's going to experiment with it. So
yeah,
maybe you should try the one-seam fastball like Joe Musgrove, too.
It was kind of fun because Scott was agonizing over whether to take Max Scherzer.
Rocking back and forth
like he is right now, and I looked over the partition and said, you can't take Max Scherzer here this early. I might. Said, no, you won't. And then he picked him.
Well, look, Correa and Seager were off the board. Encarnacion, I took Encarnacion. Trey Turner, Miguel Cabrera, Joey Votto. So, yeah, Scott said, Daniel Murphy, Francisco Lindor, who went pretty early, Starling Marte, George Springer. Those were the next hitters off the board. So it was Scherzer and then Bumgarner, who went back-to-back in round two. And that's what we see with the ADP. Scherzer 13th overall, Bumgarner 16th overall. And based on a 12-team league, you actually have five pitchers going in the second round. You have Scherzer, Bumgarner, and then this group, 19th through 23rd. And Syndergaard is fourth off the board in average draft position, followed by Chris Sale, who has never finished higher than eighth, by the way. But he's, you know, pretty consistently good, really good. And then Kluber. So again, it's Kershaw, Scherzer, Bumgarner, and Syndergaard, Sale, Kluber to finish off round two. Give me your thoughts on that group, Syndergaard, Sale, Kluber, in that order.
I don't like the order. I don't like Syndergaard that high, to be honest. I understand why people do. I think inning for inning, he might be the second best pitcher in baseball, but he also is the hardest thrower in baseball. He also has a slider that's really taxing on the arm because it's the hardest slider in baseball. And I know I'm alone in thinking this, but I feel like until I see an inning, a pitcher handle that ace workload, which is like 210 plus innings for me, I'm not just assuming he can do it, especially in Syndergaard's case because of the effort his pitches require. So I'm probably one of the lowest on him in the industry for that reason. He's in my top 10, of course, but if he's going fourth among starting pitchers on average, there's little chance I'm going to get him.
Okay. How about you guys? Syndergaard, Sale, Kluber, all at the end of the second round, mid to end.
I love Noah Syndergaard. I don't have him ranked this high. I wouldn't take him over Sale, Kluber. I wouldn't take him over Arrieta.
I would take him over Arrieta. I would not take him over Kluber. I think that's the line I would draw. I think Arrieta is just a little less safe than those guys.
I do like this thing where Scott kind of has health concerns about every Mets pitcher except for Matt Harvey.
I have health concerns about Matt Harvey, just relative to the general population. Maybe not so much.
Yeah, so as I said yesterday, you really, if you want, you can make a case against all of these guys. And we do that as fantasy analysts a lot. We have to, you know, you have to look for negatives. But Kershaw and Scherzer have injury issues. Bumgarner's thrown a ton of innings, and fastball velocity was a little bit down, kind of stretching it a little bit with Bumgarner.
Yeah, he had his best season ever.
Yeah, he was really good.
Yeah, I don't think we have... If there's anybody we don't have concerns on, it's Bumgarner.
No,
which
I know.
Probably means...
But I can make a somewhat similar comparison to Bumgarner to Felix Hernandez. Like, Hernandez, 200 innings year after year after year, fastball velocity went down, and then, like, pretty much all of a sudden, he was bad.
Yeah, but that was when he was 30.
Yeah. And
Bumgarner's 26?
Six or seven. Yeah, he's a young guy. All right, but Sale, you want to make a case against him, he's been a 330 ERA guy 2 years in a row or something like that. And
the peripherals backed it up last year.
And, he intentionally got fewer strikeouts. He wanted to pitch deeper into games.
He intentionally pitched worse.
No, he intentionally pitched deeper into games. And his innings went up, right?
The funny thing is, we did between sound checks, we were doing the math on this. And it's amazing how well the math works out. That his plan to extend himself basically resulted in like 1/10 of a pitch less per batter faced, but he faced less batters per inning. And so he threw one pitch less per inning, which could basically get you like two batters more per game, which turns out to be about 18 innings, which is what he threw more in 2016.
Big deal.
Yeah.
And he had his best year, but I think win-loss record had a lot to do with that too. Sale went 17-10.
And look, a bad team.
Yeah. Okay.
No, he's on a good team.
You think he's worthy? You think he's worthy of a second round pick, Chris Sale?
No.
Yes.
Well, yeah. Sorry. Very, very end of the second round.
Yeah, he's right in that. I have Scherzer, Bumgarner, and Sale right next to each other in my overall rankings.
The argument against Sale for me is what happened to Price last year, and maybe we have more of an explanation for that. But left-handed, homer-prone pitcher at Fenway Park.
But he's going to a better park. He's getting a park upgrade.
We said that about Price going from Toronto, though.
Well, but Price had been in Toronto for like 3 days.
It's a short fence at Fenway. Really short fence. Yep. Not
Chicago,
short fence.
The White Sox play in one of the very best home run parks for right-handed hitters. Better than Fenway.
I think the thing about these guys, Sale in particular, like if he struggles, and look, a 3.34 ERA is not great, not what you expect from a second round pick, but the innings and the strikeouts are going to be so good that there's a safety net there. Even if they do struggle, they're still going to be worth starting, and that's what you're paying for in the second round. Now let's move on. We got to talk about more guys here. After the second round, we have Jake Arrieta, John Lester going in the third round in a 12-team league, picks 28 and 35. Jake Arrieta and John Lester. And who do you like better, guys, Arrieta or Lester?
Arrieta.
I like Lester because the argument against Arrieta with the spike in walks last year it's a little scary for me. The knock on Lester, I guess, would be there is almost zero chance he will be the number one pitcher in fantasy. Yeah. But like I said yesterday, Anthony Rizzo is to first round hitters, Lester is to aces, in that you could trust he will be among them even if he's not the very best.
Yeah.
Okay.
I like Arrieta more, but he was pretty mediocre for more than half the season last year.
All right, we're eight pitchers deep. Let's go to round four now. We have a lot of pitchers. We have four pitchers coming off the board here. Yu Darvish, David Price. Okay, we'll skip him. Justin Verlander and Johnny Cueto. Yu Darvish, Justin Verlander, Johnny Cueto. We're still at the point where we feel good about these guys being our number one starter. Darvish, Verlander, Cueto.
A little iffy now. I feel okay with Verlander. I know I'm the high guy on him. Feel like there was a lot of health issues for that 2 year period, and then the turnaround actually began in the second half of 2015. So I feel like I feel pretty good about him sustaining ace caliber production. Johnny Cueto, I trust at least in a points league at that level. I guess Darvish is the shaky one, his first full year back from Tommy John surgery.
Mm-hmm. I like them fine as number ones in points league specifically.
Yeah, I mean, Darvish is another guy who's been a little mediocre-ish in terms of run prevention throughout his career. He strikes so many guys out that he kind of makes up for it. I feel fine. Those are the last three guys, including David Price with a giant asterisk for now, that I have in my top 12. So,
okay. Yeah, Darvish is a good guy to draft if, obviously, you have to take Darvish first, but, you know, like, if you take Dallas Keuchel or Kyle Hendricks, one of the guys that doesn't strike out a lot of guys, having Darvish helps you be able to draft later a good pitcher who doesn't excel at strikeouts.
Or if you're one of those people that wants to get two of the top 12 starting pitchers, putting him and Johnny Cueto together is a really nice combination.
Sure. All right, well, let's move on to round five now. Steven Strasburg, Carlos Carrasco, and Chris Archer is right there at the turn, 60th overall. Steven Strasburg, Carlos Carrasco, Chris Archer. So again, we don't want them to be our number one starting pitchers unless we're Chris. And that's not saying that in a bad way, but you know Chris's strategy now. He waits longer.
I heard some disdain in the way he said that.
I did. Yeah. And that's
your
why,
shots. I'm fine.
That's
I can
why
handle it.
I immediately tried to like jump back on it because it came out the wrong way. And I
Danny
do apologize.
Danny Duffy was my number one pitcher in the draft we did last night. I can take it.
Danny
I make
Duffy.
My choices.
Danny Duffy, there's only one pitcher that gave up a higher percentage of hard contact, and that was Hector Santiago.
I don't believe hard contact percentage is very relevant when discussing starting pitchers.
How come?
I don't believe pitchers have all that much control over exit velocity.
Really?
Okay. And the data backs me up on this. It's been shown that batters have roughly 80% of the control over the gains or losses in exit velocity for starting pitchers.
Okay.
Chris is trying to make his argument for Michael Pineda.
all right, where are we at? We're at Strasburg, Carrasco, and
it's
Archer.
It's not 2015 anymore, Heath.
Let me talk about
three pitchers.
Okay, yeah. Go ahead. Well, I want to kick it off with Archer, Scott, if you wouldn't mind.
Okay.
38th in points in Roto, and he had a bad year last year. I just want to focus on his ERA, which was 4.02. His ERA the previous three seasons, 3.22, 3.33, 3.23. And then after the All-Star break, it was 3.25. So I guess you could say he had one half of a season where he didn't pitch around a 3.20, 3.30 ERA in his last 4 years. And you know he's an elite strikeout guy with 233 of them last year. Do you expect Archer to be a 3.20, 3.30 ERA, a ton of strikeout guy, and a pretty good value at that point?
Yeah, I like the way he bounced back at the end of last season. And the walk rate dramatically improved during that stretch. He had some mechanical issues, some pitch selection issues early that seemed to overcome. I'm very confident in him. Love getting him as a number two.
I think he'll be a low-mid threes ERA guy. The problem is you really can't expect him to win very many games, and you can't expect him to throw a ton of innings. He could get to 200, but he's not a guy that you think could make that leap to the ace land, probably, because he can't win games or reach a lot of innings.
Strasburg, Carrasco, and Archer, do they all have, let's say, top eight potential?
I believe so.
I think more Strasburg and Carrasco.
I like Carrasco the best because even though he's had some of the injury issues, he has some similar injury history to Strasburg, missing a lot of time, not getting the innings totals you want to see from an ace, but it's been a lot of fluke things. Like last year he had the fractured hand, and I think there was a strained hamstring in there at some point. Not what you can really concerned about with pitcher durability. I think we're still going to see that year someday where he gets the 200 innings and threatens to win the Cy Young, and
ooh,
it's just awesome.
All right. So we got some breakout potential there in round five with Strasburg, Carrasco, and Archer. Next up, we have Jacob DeGrom, who, was unbelievable in 2015, but obviously has some elbow issues. The actual injuries, he had his ulnar nerve removed from his elbow. Jacob DeGrom was the number nine starting pitcher in 2015 with pretty low innings count amongst the aces, 191 innings. So DeGrom, then Kyle Hendricks. Those are the only two that are going in round six. You want to look at the next group, Carlos Martinez, Cole Hamels. DeGrom, Hendricks, Carlos Martinez, Cole Hamels. Is there a clear separation between DeGrom and Hendricks, Martinez, and Hamels?
I think there is.
Just in terms of upside alone, I think there is.
Yeah. A lot of risk with DeGrom, though, coming off off-season elbow procedure. This should be minor, but that was something he was dealing with a lot of last year.
I mean, I don't know about you guys, but I never use my ulnar nerve in my elbow.
Is that your funny bone?
It was with my joke.
Is the funny bone just in the left elbow, though? Or no?
I don't think the funny bone is a thing. I think it's like an idiom.
Oh, but it's like a nerve, right? I thought it was an actual saying.
Well, here's the thing about DeGrom also and funny bones. Like in 2015, I said he was the number nine starting pitcher in both formats. He had fewer innings than the other eight, than the top eight. So I certainly felt like DeGrom had Cy Young potential last year. And is it just the ulnar nerve thing that's holding us back from that this year?
Well, the velocity declined, the strikeout rate declined.
He was a diminished pitcher because of the workload in 2015. Terry Collins talked about that.
Yeah, I don't know.
A lot.
It's hard to say. He just wasn't as good kind of just across the board, and I don't know how much the velocity drop and elbow concerns played into that.
Okay.
But it's weird to see guys lose velocity and then gain it back, even with extenuating circumstances.
Ooh. All right. Well, that's not good. So
I was listening to that because I was looking up the nerve. Okay. Yeah, it is the nerve that causes the funny bone sensation.
When
the ulnar nerve is bumped into the humerus.
It's not so humorous.
That's why they call it the funny bone.
So he can never get that funny bone feeling in his right arm anymore, I guess.
Well, that's a good thing. Yeah, it's a great thing. Boy, it's been a while since I had that. Well, Kyle Hendricks and Cole Hamels we talked about yesterday. I think 17th might be a little high for you guys with Kyle Hendricks, certainly with Heath and Chris. Scott is 17th overall starting pitcher. Too high for you with Kyle Hendricks? You have him 19th.
I think I'm the high guy of the three of us on Hendricks.
Yes.
So I tend to get him when I get him in round 6.
Yep.
And I would take him ahead of Martinez. I would not take him ahead of Hamels. So just, you know, some slight rearranging there for me.
I took Hendricks fairly late, 8th overall pick of round 7 yesterday, so I was happy about that. Now, Carlos Martinez, guys, high whip, didn't get the strikeouts like we were expecting last year, but still young and talented. Does Carlos Martinez, who was 22nd in points, 16th in roto last season with 195 and a third innings, does he have a chance to be Carrasco, Strasburg, Archer-esque and be a top 10 pitcher, Carlos Martinez?
Absolutely. I think he's got the Cardinals park in his favor. He's got the Cardinals probably better defense in his favor. He's still just 25 years old. There's no reason to think that we've seen the best out of Carlos Martinez. He's not quite as extreme of some of the guys I was talking about yesterday, but he really just needs to improve the control just a little bit. But still, the fact that he's posted a low 3 ERA 2 years in a row with a little bit of control problems.
He's gotten kind of lucky 2 years in a row. You look at the FIP versus ERA difference, it was much more pronounced last season, 3.61 to 3.04. But, you know, 8 strikeouts per 9, 3.2 walks per 9. Kind of Shelby Miller, right?
Oh, you mean awesome spring training Shelby Miller?
Exactly.
He's had one.
Let's see Carlos Martinez strike out 6 batters in 3 innings against the Cubs in a split squad game.
He has had one season in his short career where he struck out more than 7.5 batters per 9. Martinez's down year in strikeouts was better than Shelby Miller. He's nowhere close to Shelby Miller. That's ridiculous, and he's trolling.
I think Chris just tried to shoehorn Shelby Miller in there. What I worry about Carlos Martinez, and you know, it's a mild worry, is that he's not really any better than what Aaron Sanchez was last year. I think they're very similar pitchers in terms of ground ball percentage. So it's just, yeah. is that the true strikeout potential of Carlos Martinez, or is it more like what we saw years ago?
It is actually, he's been major league average in strikeout percentage is right around 21 to 22% over the last few years. He's at 21.5% last year, 24.4% in 2015, 21.8% in 2014.
We're arguing, I think, basically, is he a number 2 or is he a number 3?
Okay, well, last year, both Martinez and Sanchez were number 2, clear number 2 starting pitchers. 16th in roto, Martinez was number 16, Sanchez was number 17. In points, Martinez was number 22, Sanchez was number 16. The reason why Martinez was worse than Sanchez in points, Sanchez lost 2 games, Martinez lost 9 games. They had very similar ERAs.
We're talking more about ability, than fantasy production.
And Sanchez is being drafted 30 spots after Carlos
Martinez. Original question was, does Martinez have the upside to jump into that next tier? And the answer is he does. He just has to show the strikeout rate that he did in 2015.
As opposed to 2014 and 2016.
Are you confident in him meeting his upside? Upside?
I just think you're drafting his upside right now.
He's 25 years old, yeah.
But you're drafting his upside.
No, you're drafting him to be what he was last year. He was the number 16 pitcher in Roto last year, right?
Right.
No, Martinez was 22 in Roto. Oh, no, you're right. 16th in Roto, 22
points. But Aaron Sanchez going 34 spots behind him.
Because we don't think Aaron Sanchez will be as good as he was last year.
All right. Let's move on. Let's move on to the next group. We'll get to Aaron Sanchez. So after the DeGrom, Hendricks, Carlos Martinez, Cole Hamels group, we've got some interesting pitchers here. We got Greinke and Masahiro Tanaka. They're going around 90th overall, followed by Rick Porcello and Gerrit Cole. We're almost 24 pitchers deep here. Greinke, Tanaka, Porcello, Garrett Cole. Who's your favorite in that group?
Greinke.
Who's your second favorite in that group? Greinke, Tanaka, Porcello, Cole.
Cole.
Porcello.
What?
Well, Cole, I mean, we talked about Porcello a lot during the offseason and yesterday. Cole was number 8 in 2015 in points in Roto, 260 ERA, right around a strikeout per inning, 1.09 whip. Was it just the injury last year, Scott? You seem to be the low man on Garrett Cole.
He did have an injury situation all season. It began in spring training with a rib cage issue. He got off to a very late start, and then that seemed to cause arm problems that eventually ended his season with a couple DL stints along the way. That's probably the reason why he struggled, but we're talking like a one-year sample of him having top-end production, so I'm not as willing to give him the benefit of the doubt as some of these other pitchers who we suspect were mostly sidetracked by injury last year.
Well, he doesn't have that long of a career, though. Cole kind of made the logical jump to a standout, right? You know, like he broke out when he was supposed to break out. I've been very willing to take Garrett Cole.
There's a point where I would also be very willing to take Garrett Cole, but the difference, I think, is kind of what Chris was kind of saying with Carlos Martinez versus Aaron Sanchez. People are paying for Cole like he will bounce back. When, you know, other cases like this, Keuchel and Sonny Gray, and certainly Jordan Zimmermann.
I guess.
I don't think you're paying for the bounce back. The bounce back is a top 10 pitcher. You're getting him as the 21st pitcher off the board, or 20.
And.
I mean, the difference between number 10 and number 21 is very insignificant.
And yesterday on the podcast, you said that big part of the reason why you like Rick Porcello, who's in this group, is you buy the improvement in control. It generally doesn't regress, right?
Yes. When it gets to like elite level.
Well, Garrett Cole was pretty close to elite in 2015. 1.9 per 9. Yeah. That's right around where Rick Porcello's been.
I thought Porcello was 1.3.
Yeah, Porcello was 1.3 last year.
Okay. I mean, you're talking about, again, that's a walk every 3 starts probably.
It makes a difference in terms of where a pitcher ranks.
But I don't know.
In walks per 9.
It seems like it's within the realm of realistic.
I'm not really sure how this ties to Garrett Cole.
Well, I don't think Garrett Cole made that jump in 2015. That was the biggest improvement he made.
Well, he lost a lot of effectiveness aside from control last year. It wasn't just his control betrayed him. It was
sure. But you're saying that you don't buy the 2015 being real. Why do you buy the 2016 for Rick Porcello then?
What, are we specifically talking about walks? You kind of lost me.
That was the big improvement that Garrett Cole made from 2015. You said Garrett Cole doesn't have the.
I loved Garrett Cole going into last year. I had no concerns about it.
But so yeah,
because then he lost effectiveness.
Lost a lot of strikeouts last year. I mean that should be even when Cole got off to a good start. His first 15 starts, he had a 260 ERA. No, a 278 ERA. But he had 73 strikeouts and 87 and a third. And he was not pitching deep into games. His last 6 starts, 7.22 ERA. You got to think the injury had something to do with that, as Cole ended up with elbow inflammation. He had a strained triceps at one point, and of course the rib inflammation that Scott referenced. But I guess the difference of trying to help Scott, you know, to help move this along, Scott was high on Cole going into 2016, but maybe it was the drop in strikeouts or and innings per start.
Right. We're assuming a lot of things with Cole. We're assuming A, he's healthy now. B, health was what caused him to become so ineffective, and C, that the 2015 breakthrough was legitimate. That's a lot of assumptions to make. They may all prove right. It's just the ADP, I'm not willing to take the leap on all 3 at once right there.
I feel the same way about Cole. Sorry, Chris. I feel the same way about Cole as I do about Keuchel. And I don't know. Am I being foolish? I believe strongly in the injury bounce back theory. And I think those two guys are great candidates to do it, Garrett Cole and Dallas Keuchel.
I don't believe so much in the injury bounce back theory. The reason I treat Cole different than Keuchel is I thought that his breakout looked more legitimate than Keuchel's did, which is just some confirmation bias, but also based on the strikeouts.
Yeah. Okay.
I would argue Keuchel had 2 years. Obviously, the Cy Young year was even better, but the first of those 2 years, I mean, he was still a high-end fantasy pitcher. But I mean, the main thing for me is I can get Keuchel so much more affordably than Cole.
It's about 30 spots overall right now.
Yeah. So difference of 2.5, 3 rounds.
Yeah, that is a pretty significant difference. Okay. Tanaka and was the other guy in that group out of Greinke, Tanaka, Porcello, Cole. I think I said yesterday I don't see myself drafting Tanaka because I don't really get Tanaka, but I suppose, like, he's being drafted 21st overall. I suppose I see Tanaka as like a safe number 3.
I like him where he's being drafted. I think that's fine. I would take him after Cole, but I would take him before Porcello for sure.
Maybe it's not fair, but I just keep waiting for the other shoe to drop with him.
With the elbow?
The elbow, yeah.
Well, that's
some
part
guys
of it.
Now that he's done it for a year, it'll happen, but like there was quite a while where we thought it was going to happen with Irvin Santana too. And he's going on like 6 years or something.
Longer than that.
Yeah, no, like Tanaka, right, I understand there's a good chance he's going to be the top 24 pitchers selected, but I'd like him to be my third.
I hear you. I'm with you, Adam. We're the two who are spending more on high-end pitchers, so.
Yeah.
We're speaking the same language.
All right, that's Team Scam. So after that, we've got a guy that I don't know if he fits here. 24th pitcher off the board, Jose Quintana. I like almost want to say bust because he just
he can't bust. You know exactly what he is. He's been the same guy for
I know
4 years.
I know he's not a number 2.
You drafted him 70 spots lower.
Yeah, yeah. It's now you're forced to pay for that production, but before you got it for very cheap.
Right, right. Yeah. So 2014, as we mentioned, he's been a very similar pitcher. 2014, he was outside the top 40. 2015, he was 31st in points, 40th in Roto, and last year Quintana was 19th in points, 21st in Roto. He did get a little bit better. The whip came down a little bit. It was 1.16, but he also won 4 more games, won 13 games instead of the 9 games he kept on winning. I don't know. Like, let's look who's going after Jose Quintana. The order surprises me a little bit. This is Fantasy Pros ADP. Kenta Maeda, Danny Duffy, Julio Teheran, Aaron Sanchez, Danny Salazar. So again, it's after Quintana, it's Maeda, Duffy, Julio Teheran, Aaron Sanchez, Danny Salazar.
I think we would agree they all have more upside than Quintana, except maybe Teheran, who's kind of similar. But I think last year really accentuated the value of a Jose Quintana because after the real high-end pitchers, it was so hard to find anybody reliable to fill in the back end of your staff. Like, we all went through this together. We were cycling through different pitchers on the waiver wires, and just nobody was really sticking.
Right.
Quintana, just the security he provides, the innings you know he's going to eat. Like, it makes him... Like, I wouldn't want him as my second starter, but as your third starter, it's awesome.
Okay. So, talking about the next group of guys then, Maeda, Duffy, Julio Teheran, Aaron Sanchez, Danny Salazar. We're talking round 9 now in a 12-team league. What do you think about that group? I know it's a lot of names, so just I'll read it again for the listeners, even though you're probably sick of it. Danny Duffy, Teheran, Aaron Sanchez, Danny Salazar, and I forgot about Kenta Maeda. He's the first one there. 25 through 29 in pitchers drafted. What do you think of that group?
I'd move Duffy up more. I actually am more comfortable with him than even Gerrit Cole.
We are taking starting pitcher as relief pitcher thing out of the equation for now. So
right.
Just
right.
As a starting pitcher.
Even in that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, even in Roto, I have him ranked ahead of
just
Cole.
Just because Duffy's last year, good year was last year.
Well, you say that like it's a small thing.
Well, I think it is a small thing. It's a sequencing issue.
No, time progresses in the way it progresses. I mean,
it's getting really deep.
Like, Duffy's
like a sequencing thing. You make it sound like all the years happen simultaneously, and I'm just picking a random one.
No, I don't think you're picking a random one. I do think last year is more significant than 2015. I just don't know. Like, Duffy's 2 years older than Cole. We've seen him struggle a lot more than we've seen Cole struggle.
Yeah, but he was healthy last year, and he was dominant last year. And
he wasn't dominant. He gave up a lot of home runs in his last few starts.
Yeah, I mean, not being used to starting, pitching into unfamiliar territory with the innings, I think that's...
I love Danny Duffy, but he was kind of dominant in the same way that Matt Shoemaker was.
He was. We write off Matt Shoemaker in a way that we don't with Danny Duffy, and Shoemaker never had the big regression that Duffy did. They kind of had backwards seasons. Like
his
Duffy,
swinging strike rate dropped a lot.
Duffy completely ran out of steam at the end of the season.
Yeah, understandably.
He got crushed.
Understandably.
But I think Duffy's the one guy out of that group that I'm most likely to end up with. I think I've ended up with him as my number one a few times. Just because I do think he has ace upside.
Interesting. Okay, yeah. And I just like, just to say kind of what Scott, I think, is thinking with the Gerrit Cole thing. It's not just that Duffy had a better season last year than Cole. It's that Cole showed some issues last season. You know, I think that's part of the argument as well.
Right. I was just saying that Duffy's career sample is much larger, and he's had many more issues. He had 2 years in a row before last year where he couldn't even strike out 7 batters per 9 innings.
I know that this is not something we usually do, but I think I think if you're close, if you've got two pitchers who are neck and neck, I want to favor the National League pitcher. I think it's an advantage that we don't really talk about enough.
I think that makes total sense.
Yeah.
It's one of the reasons that I think maybe Taijuan Walker's park change is being a little bit blown out of proportion.
Well,
he gets to face the National League.
I wonder if park changes are just kind of overrated in general. Because you're still talking about roughly half their starts.
Right. But almost all of his starts will be against the National League.
I struggle with that concept, too. I used to pretty much stand by the idea that it was overrated completely.
Except for Miller Park.
But no, there's been a few in recent years, a few examples of it obviously making a difference. So, I mean, with Taijuan Walker, since we're going on that tangent, I mean, the biggest issue for him, I think, is just what's it going to take for him to unlock the potential, no matter what park it happens in, no matter what league it happens in.
I am not ready for this tangent yet. We have too many more high-end pitchers to talk about here.
All right, I'm not ready.
I thought we were already Aaron Sanchez, so I thought it was time.
Speaking of high-end pitchers, Felix Hernandez is up next in ADP.
Well, yeah, are you guys, I brought it up yesterday, are you guys also concerned about Aaron Sanchez and the 95-ish innings bump from last year from 2015 to 2016?
Sure.
Yeah,
that's a tally mark in the concerns column.
And the fact
that every pitcher has.
And the fact that most of what he did last year was unsustainable.
To an extent.
Carlos Martinez fan over there.
All right.
Yeah, I mean, he had a 3.55 FIP and a 3 ERA. If he posts a 3.55 FIP and gets through this season healthy, I think you probably like him a lot.
Is he a 3.55 ERA or 3.55
ERA. Okay.
All right, 29. After Sanchez, 28. 29 is Danny Salazar. I know you guys disagree on that, but we
love him.
Felix Hernandez, Rich Hill. We still have some pitchers with tremendous upside in our next group.
Oh, that's going to be true through number 80. So
yeah,
yeah, but you know what? In some cases, it's proven upside. Felix Hernandez, Rich Hill, who seriously pitched like a top 5 pitcher when he pitched. Michael Fulmer, Dallas Keuchel, Matt Harvey. So it's Felix Hernandez, Rich Hill, Michael Fulmer, Dallas Keuchel, Matt Harvey. We're around the end of round 9 into round 10 in a 12-team league. Who are your two favorites from that group out of Felix, Hill, Fulmer, Keuchel, and Harvey?
Keuchel and Hill.
Over Hill Harvey, Scott? And Hernandez.
Wait, Scott, Keuchel and Hill over Harvey?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Fairly. Harvey's my third favorite. Okay. I have a lot of shares in all three, Keuchel, Hill, and Harvey. This year, this is the most common area in the pitcher rankings where I'm drafting my third starting pitcher.
I don't like Harvey or Keuchel at all. I like Felix and Hill quite a bit.
Chris?
Fulmer, I guess.
You have the one guy nobody else.
I don't think I've drafted a single person from this group.
But you're all about investing in the upside. I mean,
yeah, and
the other guys have more upside.
Yeah, I just other guys don't have quite as big question marks. Like Felix looked like he kind of lost it last year.
Yeah, I'm done with him. Personally.
Rich Hill's a 37-year-old who would need a 95-inning bump this season to be a really useful fantasy option all season.
Not crazy, but it's taking a leap.
It'd be crazy. They might make a movie about it.
I mean, he just doesn't have to get the blister he got last year. I mean,
or have any of the other injuries he's had over the last 15 years.
Or have any other injuries.
But, yeah, he doesn't have to get the blister and then, like, miss, like, a month and a half with it. Yeah, it just...
Yeah, but here's the thing. Like, I think Rich Hill is great in a roto league. And
yeah.
I feel like if you draft Dellin Betances, you know, you should be thrilled about Rich Hill because he's got the potential to pitch a lot more innings and put up great ratios and just be awesome.
That might be a fun bet.
Like, look, I would bet on Rich Hill suffering an injury at some point, too. But the way he talks sometimes, it makes it sound like there's zero chance he could get more than 150 innings. And that seems way too narrow-minded.
The last time he did it, George W. Bush was president. And that's
right.
The only time he's done
it. That's because Rich Hill has this really odd history. I mean, if we took that approach, then we would have never picked him up off the waiver wire last year either, you know?
There's a difference between picking him up off the waiver wire and drafting him as the 30th pitcher off the board.
I think you're missing my point, but it'd take too long to get
I
there.
Would not say there's a 0% chance that he gets more than 150 innings pitched.
Well,
I might say 0% he gets 200.
If Rich Hill pitches as well as he has pitched at the very end of 2014, or at the very end of 2015 and all of 2016, how many innings do you need for him to be your number three starter?
150?
Your number three starter? Again, I actually think Betances is a really... useful comp, and Dellin Betances is going 165.
Yeah, but Betances is going to throw like 80 innings.
How many innings did Hill throw last year?
110.
And he was the 20-something pitcher in Roto? I mean, obviously there's reasons to be skeptical of whether or not he was really as valuable as that formula says he was, but compared to somebody like Betances, I mean, Betances is giving you those 80-plus innings. Like, you need him in your lineup the whole year. If Hill is only giving you that many, then it's because he's out of the lineup periodically and you could put some pitcher in instead. So sure. That would make him more valuable just on that level.
All right, now we're reaching a point where we don't have guys who have done it before, for the most part. All right, so you don't have Matt Harvey, you don't have Dallas Keuchel, a Cy Young winner, and you don't have Felix Hernandez. Now we're at 35 in the pitcher rankings, and we have Jameson Taillon, I don't think I've seen him go that high in our drafts. Steven Matz, Tanner Roark, Marcus Stroman, and John Lackey. That's the next, we're in like round 12 now in a 12-team league. And there's a big gap, by the way, between number 34 Harvey and then 18 picks later, number 35 Taillon. Taillon, Matz, Roark, Stroman, Lackey. Who are your two favorites in that group of five?
Matz and Stroman. I like the improvements that Marcus Stroman made in the second half last season. He started to resemble someone who can turn into an ace. He always has the huge ground ball potential or the ground ball ability, but he finally started striking guys out in the second half.
And he always struck them out in the minor leagues. Yep. He was actually like a stat head darling beyond what the more traditional prospect evaluators said. So, like, this has been a long time coming. I would also agree Matz and Stroman.
Okay.
I'll say Matz and Stroman.
Are there any pitchers in that group? And again, it's Matz, Stroman, Taillon, Roark, and Lackey that you don't want to draft. For me, it's Lackey. I'm kind of some sort of run out of steam at the end of last year, and ERA went up, and the park's not as good as it used to be for him.
I'm not drafting Lackey either.
In a points league, like I feel like he'll give you a lot of innings. In a roto league, Lackey is probably, for me, going to lose out to the younger guys.
Actually, I have a lot of shares in Lackey this year, too. It's usually as my like number four guy, but I just love drafting Cubs pitchers, especially ones who pitch deep into games, because the win potential is just...
It's a pretty good point.
There's no comparison.
And I'm not drafting Taillon that high.
Yeah.
Right, when would you be comfortable with Taillon? Like
around 50th pitcher off the board?
Okay.
Yeah.
So let's look at
too many unknowns.
Let's look at these high upside guys after. Kevin Gausman doesn't get talked about with the youngsters that much, but he's 40th off the board. Julio Urias, Lance McCullers, not all of these people are going to be young, by the way, but Gausman, Urias, McCullers, Jay Happ, and James Paxton. Happ was a top 15 pitcher last year. He was like 20-2 or something crazy. I forget what his record was. It was crazy. Or am I confusing it with Aaron Sanchez?
No. Well, you might as well.
They both had crazy. He was 20-4, J-Hap.
And Sanchez was 15-2.
Yeah. So Hap Paxton, McCullers, Arias, and Gossman. He was better than them last year. Are you guys taking all those young guys ahead of Hap this year?
And about 20 other pitchers.
I recently lowered it, like literally right before this podcast, I lowered Hap in my rankings, I think to behind all these pitchers. But it's more because I've come to realize I can wait that long to draft Hap. Like those pitchers are going to go ahead of him. So if I'm sitting there with my rankings, and I want to get all of them, the way to get all of them is to rank Hap behind the others.
I guess what you could say is Scott realized he doesn't have to draft him that early.
And so let me, of the four youngsters in that group then, and again, they were Gossman, Arias, McCullers, and Paxton. Who are your two favorites?
McCullers and Paxton. We all agree. Am I wrong?
Was Manaea in that group, or
no.
Did you go? Did you say Manaea?
No, he's next.
Okay, he's the very next one. Because I would say Paxton and Manaea, but since that's not a choice, we do all agree with Paxton and McCullers.
I actually think it's Gossman and McCullers.
Ah, we don't agree.
Gossman, give him a little love.
I do want to say, I would love to see Kevin Gossman just try to be Matt Shoemaker for a little while, because his splitter is really, really good, and he only throws it about 19% of the time. I think he can make the jump to ace territory with that.
Kevin Gossman, after the All-Star break, went 8-6 with a 3.10 ERA, 28 walks, 92 strikeouts in 93 innings. He did give up 13 home runs. And one of the problems you run into with AL East pitchers, like, he had two bad starts against Toronto and one bad start against Boston in that stretch. The back end of their schedule does get loaded with good lineups a lot. But the lineups might not be quite as good this year. This group, though, Chris has a different philosophy, but we want these guys to be, like, our number four pitchers?
Yeah.
That would be ideal. Ideally. I'm fine with McCullers as the number three.
All right. Next up, Sean Manaea, 46th pitcher off the board. And the rounds don't really matter. Just figure we're around round 14, 15, and later. Sean Manaea, Aaron Nola. Oh, my gosh. That's the way the intro to the podcast today is. Sean Manaea, Aaron Nola, Scott Bradley. That's cool. Vince Velasquez, Jeff Samardzija, and Matt Moore, two Giants pitchers. Manaea, Nola, Velasquez, Samardzija, Matt Moore, and then I'll throw Carlos Rodon in there as well. What do you make of that group, guys?
My favorites are Nola and Rodon.
Mine too.
Velasquez and Rodon.
Chris is the downer on Nola. Heath and I both believe he has...
Actually, I'll go Velasquez and Nola.
Really?
Carlos Rodon just a tad behind.
What?
All the hate you have for... Where do you have Carlos Rodon?
45.
Okay, so we're quite a bit higher on these guys than you are.
I will mention, unless we want to go down the Nola trail again, Samardzija probably goes higher in a points league because of the reliability of innings.
I'm not drafting Jeff Samardzija this year.
You don't have to, but plenty of people will, and they would not be wrong to do so.
Yeah, Samardzija was 25th in points, 39th in Roto last year. He threw 203 and a third. I feel like moving to the Giants was good for him.
It was.
And Matt Moore, too. Matt Moore at AT&T Park had a 3.16 ERA and a reasonable amount of walks, 12 in 37 innings. And actually, I was looking at Matt Moore's game log, and it made me think maybe I should draft him if he's there late enough. Later than this, I'd say. But he actually had some really dominant starts down the stretch.
Yeah, I think home runs were his biggest issue, and San Francisco, there's no better place to go for that. His ERA was exactly the same during his time with the Rays and the Giants last year, but the home run rate was like cut in half with the Giants. It's just he started walking guys out of nowhere again. And I guess that's always going to be a concern with him, but we know he can do better with the walks than he showed with the Giants last year. So I'm intrigued by him, too.
I don't know. He's 28. He's going to turn 28 in June. Career 3.91 ERA. Career 4.09 FIP. 600 innings. At what point are you who you are? And why isn't Matt Moore there yet?
Well, I think if you want to make one case for Matt Moore, it's like he had the Tommy John surgery. Last year was his first year back, right? from Tommy John?
No, he pitched about 100 innings between the majors and the minors the year before.
All right, well, that doesn't really help my case then. I was going to say the control should be coming back now, but yeah, that's not a good thing.
But he's never been at San Francisco before.
It helps. All right, so look, we've talked about these young high upside guys, right? Manaea, Paxton, Nola, McCullers, Rodon. They're going in the top 50-51. And then we got Sonny Gray. Sonny Gray, who was a stud for, what, 2-3 years in a row. And 2014, he was 14-10 with a 3.08 ERA, 1.19 whip. That's okay. That's not great, but it's good. 2015, 2.73 ERA, 1.08 whip. That's much better, but the strikeouts went down. So should we be taking Sonny Gray ahead of all of these unproven high upside guys? What do you think?
Ahead of some of them. I think he's being undervalued overall. This is kind of what I was getting at Gerrit Cole. Like, why are we giving him so much benefit of the doubt that we aren't getting these others? I mean, Cole and Gray, they were almost drafted. They were like back to back, I think. Maybe 2 years ago, not so much a year ago.
I think we assign more upside to Cole because he has shown the ability to strike out more than a batter per inning. And Sonny Gray's lived in the 7 strikeout per 9 area.
Right, but it gets to be a thin line when you're talking about a top 10 potential, a pitcher with top 10 potential versus a pitcher with top 20 potential. I just don't know that how many spots in the rankings are we. There's like 25 spots in the rankings difference. I don't know. It just seems inconsistent.
What I'm trying to figure out is, will the Athletics defense be any better? Because they were awful, terrible last year. Danny Valencia is gone, so that'll help. But they made a ton of mistakes, and that killed Sonny Gray because he is a guy that's always relied on a low BABIP. He had a 276, 277, 255 for 3 years in a row. Last year, it jumps up to 319.
All right,
he's
fellas.
Not going to be good with a 319 BABIP against and 7 strikeouts per 9. It's just not going to happen.
We have about 5 minutes left, so we're going to do, I would say, at least 20 more pitchers get through the top 70. I'm going to read them 5 at a time. What I want to know is, who among these pitchers do you want on your team? Jonathan Gray, or John Gray, yep, as we call him. Jake Odorizzi, Marco Estrada, Adam Wainwright, Robbie Ray.
Jonathan Gray.
Gray and Ray.
I want Ray the most. I don't want Wainwright at all.
Nope.
Okay. Would you guys rather have Robbie Ray or Marco Estrada?
Ray.
Ray.
I also don't.
Yeah, but not by much.
I also don't want Jake Odorizzi. He's so whatever.
He doesn't belong here. He doesn't. Yeah, if I have to draft him here, I don't want him.
Well, and he's only good in Tampa, and there's a chance that he gets traded.
Well, that's, yeah, he is good at Tampa. So if you have enough depth where you can just start Jake Odorizzi in home games, then okay, that's a case for Odorizzi. Next up, Shoemaker, DeSclafani, Garrett Richards, Drew Smyly, Drew Pomeranz, and obviously the David Price news affects Pomeranz, maybe affects Eduardo Rodriguez. But Matt Shoemaker, Anthony DeSclafani, Garrett Richards, Drew Smyly, Drew Pomeranz.
Shoemaker.
Shoemaker easily.
Yeah, I've given Chris a hard time about Shoemaker, but he's the clear outlier here.
Shoemaker or Robbie Ray?
Shoemaker for me.
I'll go Ray.
I'll go Ray.
Weird sound effect. Any hope in a Drew Smyly bounce back in Seattle?
Yes. Yep.
Oh, Chris said yes. Sorry.
Yes. I like the outfield defense they're putting together. I think it's a decent enough park, and we've seen him be very good before.
We have a very extensive history now of when Chris hates Drew Smyly, he's good. When Chris likes Drew Smyly, he sucks. So
true.
He's not going to be good this year.
Yeah.
If you only have to spend an 18th round pick on him, I like Drew Smyly. That's the difference.
That's fine.
Joe Ross, Michael Pineda, Jared Eichhoff, Taijuan Walker, Iwakuma. Joe Ross, Pineda, Eichhoff, Taijuan Walker, Iwakuma.
I like a lot of these guys.
Joe Ross, assuming he gets the rotation spot that he's supposed to.
Yeah, he'd be my favorite. I don't have many shares in any of these pitchers, but I don't have a problem with too many of them either. I guess Pineda is the one who I just feel like.
There's 3 guys with like number 2 potential there, I think.
Yeah. Did you know Taijuan Walker is still just 24 years old?
I've heard, yeah.
He's my favorite in the group.
You get extra strikes for being young.
Blake Snell. Blake Snell.
You don't need any other names. It's Blake Snell.
Trevor Bauer, Mike Montgomery, Jarrell Cotton, and Dylan Bundy.
There is some nice upside in that group, and there's also Trevor Bauer. Blake Snell, yeah, he's my favorite. But I do like Dylan Bundy at that price, which is basically undrafted.
Yeah, we're 73 pitchers deep here.
We 278 also, overall.
Yeah, we have Ian Kennedy, Ivan Nova. Ivan Nova with the Pirates did give up a lot of hits, but walked like three guys. I'll get the numbers here. With Pittsburgh, 5-2, 3.06 ERA, 68 hits and 64 and two-thirds, which scared me a little bit. But three walks, 52 strikeouts. In 64 and two-thirds innings. I don't know. Ivan Nova.
I don't care if you don't walk anybody. If you can't make anybody swing and miss, eventually everybody's going to realize you're just throwing strikes all the time and you're going to get pounded.
Well, his stuff's... I don't know. Like, I could see him being like a modern-day David Wells, throwing right-handed.
Wait, can you repeat that? If you talk about Aaron Nola?
Aaron Nola was good last year.
Yeah.
Struck a bunch of guys.
I have a lot of faith in Nova's Searidge,
never been
so.
Within 2 Ks per nine of what he did last year.
Nova could be worth a late-round flyer. Like, I was thinking of taking Nova in the Roto League yesterday, 12 teams.
He has, like, Bartolo of last year upside.
There's a lot of guys in the like next 15 that I'd rather draft just on upside alone than most of that group.
Okay, so why don't we finish the show with that? Give me the next the guys that we haven't talked about, 75 pitchers in, that you'd like to draft based on upside, and I will say Alex Cobb, 97th overall. I don't get it. I know he struggled last year, but he was coming back from Tommy John. Alex Cobb to me is underdrafted. That's my guy. You guys finish the show with some of your favorite late round pitchers.
My problem with Alex Cobb is I'm afraid he's going to be limited in his innings. And there's another guy coming off of Tommy John that I have no such concerns with.
Lance Lynn?
And that is Lance Lynn. Yeah. I think Lynn, the Cardinals have no reason to save him. He has already said that he doesn't want an innings limit. He's being drafted as, what, like the 80th pitcher off the board or something? You can take him. I took him in our roto draft yesterday, I think, with my very last pick.
92nd pitcher off the board.
92nd starting pitcher off the board. If he stays healthy, which is a thing with any pitcher, I don't see any way he doesn't win 12 to 15 games. Probably have an ERA in the low threes.
Okay, Lance Lynn. Scott White, how about you? Late guys that you wanted? You said Brandon Finnegan yesterday. Anyone else?
Oh, there's so many.
Right.
I actually was going to Alex Cobb before you took it, but instead I will go with, I'll save Gesellman for you, Chris. You're going with Gesellman, right?
Yes. I do like to point out, on CBS, his ADP is 60 points higher than either of the other two services listed here. That's probably all me.
I mean, one that's timely. Did we talk about Eduardo Rodriguez yesterday?
I did, and you guys sort of dismissed it because you didn't think he'd have a job, but things have changed.
Yeah, with the David Price situation, I mean, it's obviously contingent on him suffering a major injury, but not just that. I mean, Rodriguez is in the mix even apart from that. Wright has a shoulder issue. Pomerantz has an elbow issue. No guarantees they're both in the rotation. Rodriguez, I feel like Sean Manaea and Carlos Rodon get a lot of credit for the way they ended last season when Eduardo Rodriguez had a very similar stretch to end the season, really dominant stretch. Last 11 starts, he had that's more than 2 months. He had a 3.30 ERA, 1.05 WHIP, 9.6 strikeouts per nine innings.
Yeah, and you know what? I'll talk about Eduardo Rodriguez next week when we talk about late round picks, but there was a reason why he struggled early in the year, and it's the reason why spring training injuries bother me a little bit. So is that it, guys? We've got a month to talk about these guys, so we don't have to get everything in today. I'm satisfied.
Cool. Looking forward to the tweets about what pitcher we did not talk about that somebody wanted to hear about.
Well, you can bet we'll talk about it next week. If there's anybody you ever want to hear about, just email the show or tweet us. Email address fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. Enjoy your weekend, fellas. I'll talk to y'all on Monday for Heath Cummings, Chris Towers, Scott White. I'm Adam Azer. See you later.
Later.